This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Hello and welcome to Live and Learn on the Bigger Picture with me, Lim Soo Ann. It's been more than a year since COVID-19 has upended our lives, especially the lives of our healthcare frontliners, regardless of whether they've been directly involved in treating COVID-19 patients or not. So today I'm speaking to one of our healthcare workers, Dr. Tarshana Thinakaran, a medical officer from Malacca Hospital, to find out from her, you know, what goes on behind the scenes at the hospital and how our actions can help or in worst cases, burden our healthcare workers. Thank you so much for joining me today, Dr. Tarshana.
Thank you, Sue Ann. Thank you for having me on your show.
It's our pleasure to do so. You know, we're always happy to speak to our healthcare workers to really give people an insight into what's happening at the hospitals. So, you know, tell us a bit about yourself. I mentioned that you're a medical officer at Malacca Hospital, but, you know, how long have you been there? And I guess what drew you into medicine as well?
Okay, so I am currently a pediatric medical officer in Hospital Malacca. Over the years, I've worked in a few hospitals across Malaysia, and I was transferred to Malacca last year, actually just at the beginning of MCO. So as I was working over the past few years, I found my passion in treating children. And in terms of what drew me into medicine, I've always been fascinated with watching people heal and, you know, trying to see, find out new ways that we can help them. So I think my passion started when I was really young. Yeah.
So what has it been like to be a pediatric medical officer during the pandemic? You know, and you mentioned you just got transferred to Hospital Malacca at the start of the MCO last year. You know, what was it like then, you know, to suddenly find out that we are thrown into a pandemic?
It was certainly challenging. I mean, as most people know, the number of COVID cases have been on the rise lately. Although the past few days, we've seen a slight improvement, it's still a significant amount compared to last year. So as a result, my colleagues and I, we were just trusted into, you know, battling this virus as frontliners, and we're having far busier shifts due to the large patient number. Furthermore, the increase of strains and concern make it really challenging because it's more contagious and deadly. So patients nowadays tend to require more immediate care because they can deteriorate very quickly if not treated instantly. So that is one challenge we faced. The other challenge would be that I think it's in regards of combating misinformation, which has been quite rampant. There seems to be a huge, you know, obsession or huge desire to believe in all these conspiracy theories revolving the virus and the vaccine. So this has certainly not made our jobs easier. Yeah.
Do you hear a lot of misinformation from parents, I guess, being in the pediatrics department?
Yes, we do. And unfortunately, at present, we're mostly focusing, even in terms of vaccination, we're focusing on adults. Mm-hmm. So a lot of parents are not sure. And sometimes when they receive forwarded messages, it's a bit hard, you know, sometimes to differentiate what is actually true and what isn't. So we're constantly battling that, and we're constantly trying to educate them to make sure that they keep their little ones safe. Yeah. Mm.
How has it been like to work in the pediatrics department during COVID-19? You know, you mentioned your workload has increased a lot. The shifts are a lot more tiring, I imagine, you know. But what has it been like to, I guess, care for children who are among the more vulnerable during the pandemic?
The first two words that come to mind is heartbreaking, because most of the little ones, it's not their fault if they've contracted the virus, you know, especially if you're, you know, under five and you can't really travel or go out on your own. So as adults, I think it's our responsibility to keep them safe. Most, I think you probably heard of this, most adults complain of the swab test being pretty invasive. Mm-hmm. So you can imagine what it's like for the little ones. It's pretty heart-wrenching to have to witness and perform this swab test for them. We really wish we wouldn't have to put them through this, you know. Lately, we've had a surge of COVID-positive pregnant mothers, resulting in babies being separated at birth. And we've had to, you know, isolate them and test them to make sure they're COVID negative. So this is an unnecessary amount of trauma and, you know, suffering to them that could be completely avoided if SOP was followed, you know.
And I'm sure you're no stranger to emergency situations in your profession, right? So what happens if you have an emergency situation, you have a patient who needs medical attention, but, you know, you don't know if they are COVID positive or COVID negative, right? Does that affect how the doctors, the nurses attend to the patient?
Okay. Honestly speaking, not really. We have been advised, if we're unsure, to sort of make sure we wear our PPE and don in before we attend to the patient. But at times, we've seen patients collapse, and sometimes we're partially donned. You know, we rush the process, and in result, our donning process is not probably complete. But donning aside, after wearing the PPE can be pretty challenging as well, because sometimes we're stuck hours trying to resuscitate and stabilize a patient. It's pretty humid in Malaysia, so hours we would spend inside an isolated cubicle, you know, where after a while you're unable to breathe properly, you're probably drenched in sweat, you know, dehydrated. But I guess duty comes before everything else, and we try our best to stabilize the patient and we make sure the patient's okay before we step out.
I think that's quite a picture there you've painted. You know, a lot of us see healthcare workers in this PPE, and, you know, we're told, you know, it's hot, it's humid, it's uncomfortable, but we probably don't realize the full extent of it, right? Because you're not just sitting there in your PPE, you know, you're still going about your own duties, you're still saving lives while, you know, managing all these extra steps that you have to follow.
I mean, many people think that the PPE is protective, which it is at most times, but I've personally had my PPE tear while I was doing a procedure on COVID-19 patients, especially kids. You know, you don't expect little kids to be very compliant and let you take, you know, if you want to get some blood investigation or treat them. At times, they're not really compliant, especially when they're isolated that way, or they probably just have one parent with them. So it happens while you're doing the procedure. You can't drop halfway through and run out. So you kind of finish up what you're doing. And I mean, I guess that's the risk that comes with the job.
How do the kids take to seeing, you know, their doctors and nurses in PPE? I imagine, especially for young kids, that must be quite scary for them.
It is. To be honest, it is. And, you know, we try to go in and we try to be as warm as possible. But I mean, they can barely see our eyes. So I've taken in little toys. You know, once you kind of form a bond with those kids inside, and they're stuck there for usually 10 to 14 days. So my colleagues and I have, you know, we've sort of pulled a little money together, bought them books, bought them little sets or little toys. So we try to keep the spirits high. The good news is most kids, symptoms-wise, they have mild symptoms. So it's they are okay for that 10 days. And it's just, you know, keeping them safe for those 10 days and occupied and entertained. Kids with comorbids or with illnesses, or kids with obesity, or kids that are immunosuppressed, they are at a higher risk of having more serious effects or debilitating effects. So we're more cautious when it comes to those kids.
So are you mostly involved in caring for kids who have contracted COVID-19 or a mix of both COVID and non-COVID patients?
Both, actually. So we treat COVID kids, we treat kids without COVID, and we're also rotated to the adult wards, because the number of adults that are COVID positive is significantly higher than kids. And, you know, a lot of healthcare workers experience a lot of burnout symptoms, and it's mentally really challenging. So I think there's a roster that kind of rotates us around to kind of provide a little relief if possible.
But what mental health toll has it taken on you and your colleagues? You know, how have you been feeling, especially because we've been battling COVID-19 for a year and 3 months now, about thereabouts?
Yeah. So mentally, I think there are a few aspects to it. For starters, most of us have families and we're constantly concerned that we're going to unknowingly infect our loved ones, especially if you have older parents or younger kids at home. So this is, I think, quite anxiety-inducing. The other thing is some frontliners have also been stationed in East Malaysia. So over the past year and 3 months, it's been extremely challenging for them to come back to Peninsula or, you know, spend some time with people that can help motivate them further or give them some support. I personally know colleagues who are currently undergoing depression because they've just been away for far too long and they're alone there. And like we discussed, the job scope, you know, you're at risk constantly. So I think it kind of takes a toll on your mind eventually. Mm-hmm. It is both physically and mentally challenging. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
What has helped you cope then during this pandemic? You know, what have you found most helpful?
For starters, I am quite thankful to have a good team of colleagues. Even my superiors at work, you know, everyone's kind of looking out for each other. They're constantly checking up on each other. So that helps. Having a good family and support system and, you know, friends, that helps as well. But I think most importantly, just knowing that we've managed to do this before, we've managed to flatten the curve before. So it's not something impossible. I just feel that if everyone puts their mind to it, we can get things under control sooner than later.
All right. We'll go for a very quick break now. I'm speaking to Dr. Tarshna Thinakaran, a medical officer with the pediatrics department at Malacca Hospital. And we're talking about her experience of working as a frontliner during the COVID-19 pandemic. What has it been like for her and her colleagues? And we'll continue our conversation after a quick break. We'll be right back on Live and Learn on The Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9. Welcome back to Live and Learn on The Bigger Picture with me, Lim Su Ann. I'm speaking today to Dr. Tarshna Thinakaran, a medical officer with the pediatrics department at Malacca Hospital, and she's been sharing her experience of working as a doctor during the COVID-19 pandemic, what it's been like to care for patients during this time. And, you know, she's shared quite heart-wrenching perspectives of what it's been like to care for children, especially during this very difficult time. And, you know, you were talking earlier, Dr. Tarshna, about how children with COVID-19 have to be isolated for 10 to 14 days. You know, the other doctors and the nurses, the only contacts they have. Are parents able to visit them, or, you know, how are they able to keep in touch?
So one parent is allowed to accompany them. Mm-hmm. Especially if they're incredibly young kids. Usually, most times we see if a child is COVID positive, the other family members happen to be as well. So if that's the case, one parent can accompany them. And I've seen cases where four kids come in with one parent. So it's not a smooth sailing journey for the 10 days. You know, there's no help even for that one parent who's struggling from COVID themselves to sort of take care of their children and make sure they are okay. It can be quite challenging. Besides that, for I think bigger kids, sometimes some kids come alone because what happens is they contract COVID from maybe the community or from a babysitter's place or from a grandparent. So the rest of their family is fine. So they happen to come in and get admitted alone. The good thing I've seen is when they're admitted in wards like this, usually other parents who are there with their children look out for this kid and tend to keep an eye and make sure this kid has eaten and is sleeping. And so I've seen the Malaysia boleh spirit in this aspect. So that's pretty nice. You know, we have that going regardless of race or regardless of where we're from. If there's a kid that is alone, the other families usually try and keep an eye on that kid. But yeah, it can be really stressful. Sometimes we see the one parent who's stuck there is, you know, really burnt out or really tired. But unfortunately, this is the circumstance that, you know, he or she is in at the moment. Yeah.
I think that's interesting that you brought up burnout, because it's not just the healthcare workers who are experiencing the burnout. You know, the parents have to step in as healthcare workers in that at that point as well, caring for their children. You recently shared on your social media post about how the actions of an individual can have widespread ramifications for healthcare workers, for their loved ones as well. What prompted you to share that?
It was because of the increase of COVID-positive pregnant women that were coming in. So my job that night or that morning actually was to receive the baby and make sure the baby was okay. So I'm responsible for escorting that baby to an isolation cubicle and making sure the baby is safe. And then after that, carrying out a COVID test on that baby. And, you know, the entire process was really tough. And it was, you know, the whole time I was doing that, it just kept playing at the back of my mind on how this was extremely unnecessary and completely avoidable. And we had seen a surge that week. And most of the positive cases, when we had spoken to them or when we had asked them, do you have any idea how you contracted COVID? Most of them shared stuff like, you know, we had visitors over, or we might have gone out someplace and picked it up from a mall. So I think what really prompted me to write that post was to tell people that a lot of people can be COVID positive and asymptomatic when you are in a vulnerable group. So pregnant women, children, immunosuppressed individuals, ill patients. I think it's best that you really stay at home. And most importantly, do not allow visitors. It can be family. It can be really close friends. Besides the members that are staying in that household, no one should be going in and out. Because a lot of people fail to kind of realize that, you know, they would say, but it was my daughter who came, or it was my son-in-law. Not knowing that, unfortunately, the virus doesn't pick and choose. So I think that was what really pushed me to write that post. Yeah.
Is there anything that you'd like the public to better understand about how their actions can affect the work of healthcare workers, whether in a good or a bad way?
For starters, I would really like the public to know that COVID-19 is real. It is affecting more and more people, and it's present, and even long-term effects can be detrimental. Everyone should know that this isn't a hoax or conspiracy theory. And at present, you know, our government is going all out by giving free vaccines, ramping up our vaccination drive, creating more beds for COVID-19 patients, employing more staff to handle the situation, and most importantly, giving the best care possible. And we've been, you know, at it, we've been pushing for the past 15 months. But none of this will work, and we will never be able to get this under control without, you know, the help of the public, which is why, you know, we keep on saying SOP needs to be strictly followed. You know, as simple as mask worn correctly, distance maintained, outside movement limited. But most importantly, please sign up on MySejahtera to get vaccinated. Because the longer we take to achieve immunity, herd immunity, the longer this is going to be an uphill battle for everybody, especially frontliners who are having to deal with this challenge day in, day out. So it can be as simple as just starting at home and helping your immediate family members and loved ones, and to making sure that their app is updated. And I think MySejahtera now has a dependent segment or feature on mm-hmm. their app where you can utilize it for elderly folks or those who don't have access to a smartphone. Yeah. As a pediatric doctor, I'm especially going to stress for parents to get vaccinated. I think it is an added barrier to protect your children, because they at present are not eligible for the vaccine yet. Mm. Yeah.
You know, you mentioned a lot of parents were getting misinformation, right? But what are their main concerns among parents who haven't gotten their vaccine or are worried about it?
So a lot of parents, I mean, I think that wouldn't be specific to parents. I think a lot of adults are concerned about taking the vaccine. And it could be for many reasons. Fear of needles being one of the simplest reasons. You know, I mean, you'd be surprised how many people do not like needles. And I can totally understand and, you know, relate to that. I have family members who are in this exact predicament. Mm-hmm. I think the other reason would be nowadays with, like we discussed, a lot of misinformation and just the ease of social media, that, you know, how we can receive forwarded messages that are not true. Mm. So sometimes it's quite hard when people are not sure where they should go and check whether that particular source is true or not. So I think that's why maybe a lot of adults and parents as well have not taken the vaccine yet or are hesitating to take the vaccine. But if you have little ones at home, then the decision is not, it's not based on you alone. You're protecting those at home as well. So I think they should, you know, keep that in mind, and hopefully it convinces them to get the vaccine, because otherwise this is going to go on. The other aspect of it is kids are going to be home. Schools are not going to reopen, and parents are struggling with online learning and teaching. I mean, that's another battle altogether. Mm. So thinking of school, thinking of, you know, daycare, a lot of parents now, they are able to take care of their kids because they're working from home. But eventually when offices reopen, they're going to struggle because you have to send your kid to a daycare center again. And if the adults there were not vaccinated and your kids happen to contract COVID from there, that's another challenge as well. So I think there are a couple of aspects to this. The simplest solution being, please get vaccinated. And if you have any doubts, that's completely normal. Just go to authorized sources to check, mainly the MOH Facebook page or website, or even WHO's official website. You know, I think those are reliable sources to depend on.
Mm. And we've seen, you know, the even at the vaccination site, the doctors there are more than happy to explain any concerns that people have about the vaccines, right? And yeah. Like the official slogan goes, "Lindung diri, lindung semua." I think that's what we really want at this point. Looking back at the past 15 months, you know, what would you say have been some of the low and high points of the past year that you think will stick with you?
The low points would definitely be the challenging shifts I've had to endure. I've had shifts where I've had to shower 6 to 7 times a day, get called in for a COVID case at 3 a.m., at 5 a.m., you know, be working continuously for more than 24 hours. So those are some examples of what I would say are low situations. You know, at times, I think I could safely speak for my colleagues. Most of us, I mean, we've had this fleeting thought, when is this going to end? You know, this is not what we signed up for, or this is not how we thought or how bad we thought things would get. But eventually, we came to terms with it and we realized, you know, this was the profession we chose. And our main aim is to help and heal patients. So we're just going to go on doing that. One high would definitely be when we flattened the curve and went to single digit numbers last year. Mm. Yeah, that was a huge relief. You know, we stopped seeing as many COVID patients. The shifts were starting to calm down a little. Everyone could get a bit more rest. You know, we weren't. So when you're in COVID call, or if you're in COVID call for 1 or 2 weeks, and you're waiting for a case to come in at 2, 3 in the morning, you don't get peaceful sleep throughout that period, you know. So we really appreciated when we managed to flatten the curve and finally we got a little peace of mind saying that, okay, maybe things are finally getting better. So that would certainly be a high. The other thing that has made me happy or is you know, giving me, so I can see the light of the end of the tunnel, would be the fact that our vaccination drive has been ramped up. So from, I think, 50 or 60,000 doses a day, now we're doing 150,000 doses. So it's just a bit more hopeful to see that. And, you know, looking at other countries, hopefully when we are closer to achieving herd immunity, we have less cases and less people passing away due to the disease. I think that's the most painful part. My colleagues in the ICU have really struggled with this. It's not easy to be the last person that see someone before they pass away. And you're basically the messenger between an anguished family and a person, you know, that's not going to be around for much longer. So I think, so I'm really hoping things get under control, because it would give everyone much needed peace of mind.
Yes. No, like you said, just register for the vaccine when your turn comes. Take the vaccine, and hopefully, you know, we will see the light at the end of the tunnel soon. And hopefully, you know, our conversation today will give people an insight into how things, into what is happening behind the scenes, and how we can all really do our little part to, you know, flatten the curve once again. We've done it before. Hopefully we can do it again. Thank you so much for speaking to me today, Dr. Tashna.
Thank you so much for having me, Sue, and really grateful to be able to share what is happening. Yeah.
All right. I've been speaking to Dr. Tashna Thinakaran, a medical officer at the Pediatrics Department at Hospital Melaka, and she's been sharing her perspective of what it's been like to be working as a frontliner during the pandemic. If you missed any part of today's show, you can download the podcast on bfm.my or on our BFM app. You've been listening to Live and Learn on The Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.